In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, please be seated. This week's reflection starts out with an old story that goes like this. There was a university professor who was searching for the meaning of life. After several years and miles, he came to the hut of a particularly holy hermit and asked to be enlightened. The holy man invited his visitor into his humble dwelling and began to serve him tea. He filled the pilgrim's cup to the brim, and then he kept pouring so that the tea was dripping all over the floor. The professor watched the overflow until he could no longer restrain himself. He said, "Stop!" He said, "It is full. No more will go in." The holy hermit replied, "Like this cup, you are full of your own opinions, preconceptions, and ideas. How can I teach you unless you first empty your cup?" It's a wonderful story about humility, about the recognition of the limits of our talents, abilities, and authority. It seems like many of our religious traditions hold the virtue of humility in highest esteem. In Dante's Divine Comedy, the virtue of humility is considered the most important of the seven capital virtues. And you may remember the seven capital virtues: chastity, temperance, charity, diligence, kindness, patience, humility. Humility holds the most important place because it is the opposite of what Dante considers the worst of the seven deadly sins, the sin of pride. The seven deadly sins, as you remember, are pride, envy, gluttony, lust, anger, greed, and sloth. Dante defined pride as the love of self perverted to hatred and contempt for neighbors. Or simply put, you think so highly of yourself, you think you're better than God or any of the people around you. For Dante, pride indeed goeth before the fall. Humility, on the other hand, is radical dependence on God, total trust in God, and surrender to his will. And yet, even though humility is highly esteemed in our religious traditions, it doesn't seem to be one of our favorite virtues today. In fact, humility seems downright humiliating. Who wants to eat humble pie, after all? Don't we think of pride as a virtue rather than a humility? Aren't we all rather more interested in buying books about the seven secrets of highly effective and successful people than a book about seven secrets of lowly, humble people? Don't we love to hold up those big foam fingers and signs proclaiming, "Our team is number one"? I've never seen a foam finger or a sign proclaiming that our team displays the virtues of temperance, honesty, and humility. Isn't the TV show American Idol about the thousands of people who desire fame, if only for 15 minutes? Can we even imagine a program about people who seek to cultivate the classical virtues of justice, temperance, and fortitude? It would seem an absurdity to have a televised competition rewarding someone for displaying the greatest humility. But I suppose we shouldn't put it past some television producer to come up with a new reality program that says, "Dancing with the Hermits." Who wants to be a Franciscan or the last monastic standing or some other nonsense like that? To quote a pop song from a few years back, we all want to be big stars. And it's not all about becoming rich and famous. Browse the self-help aisle at Barnes & Noble, and you will see books entitled Awaken the Giant Within by Anthony Roberts, The Hero Within by Carol Pearson, and my favorite, Achieve Anything in Just 1 Year by Jason Harvey. For $30 or $40, you can buy one of those books and apparently be on the road to awakening, either your inner giant or your inner hero, and achieving anything. I wonder what Dante would think. But more importantly, I wonder what Jesus would think. In our gospel lesson for this morning, Jesus tells one of his most famous stories, a story about pride and humility. Apparently, Jesus was invited to share the Sabbath meal at the house of a leading Pharisee, who would have been something of a big shot in the religious circle. Now, to me, it's hard to understand why these upright religious folks keep inviting Jesus to dinner parties. Because he always causes a ruckus. Now, you might remember another dinner party at a Pharisee's house where a disheveled and disreputable woman came in with an alabaster jar full of perfume, and she fell at the feet. She threw herself at the feet of Jesus and wept. The host was beside himself. But Jesus apparently thought she was doing a beautiful thing. So in today's story, when we hear Jesus was invited to the home of a Pharisee for a meal, you know there's going to be trouble. You just know it. So Jesus arrives and maybe makes a little small talk. Hi, how are you? How are the folks? How's your brother? And then he watches how the guests jockey with each other for the place of honor. You know that dance. Oh, it's a delicate dance where you try to get to the good seats to be next to the really important people. So Jesus watches for this little while, and then he launches into a story, which basically skewers the pretensions of all the guests. Now, he says something like this. When you get invited to a banquet, don't seat yourself in a place of honor, because someone more important than you may come along. And then you will be asked to give up your seat, and you will be disgraced in front of the whole party. Rather, take the lowest seat, so that when the host sees you sitting in the cheap seats, he will say, "Friend, come up, move higher." And then you will be honored in the presence of all the guests. And then Jesus utters the great saying, "For all who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted." Now, before Jesus leaves the party, he can't let it alone. He tells his host, "The next time you throw a party, don't invite your rich friends and neighbors so that they might return the favor and invite you to one of their nice parties. Rather, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind. Then you will be blessed, because they can't repay you. For all who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted." Now, there was a fellow by the name of Robert Coles, and he loves to tell this story about an encounter that he had with a woman named Dorothy Day. Excuse me. Dorothy Day was working in New York with the poor in the slums of the city. Robert Coles was in Harvard Medical School at the time. He was studying to be a psychiatrist, and my, but was he proud of his status. And he was, oh, so proud that he had volunteered to work with Dorothy Day in helping the poor. He arrived for his first meeting to discover Day sitting at a table, deep in conversation with a disheveled street person. She didn't notice Coles had come into the room until they had finished their conversation. Then she asked, "Do you want to speak to one of us?" Robert Coles was astounded by Dorothy Day's humility. She had identified so completely with a so-called nobody as to remove all distinction between them. Robert Cole said it changed his life. He said he learned more in that moment than he had in his 4 years at Harvard. "For all who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted." In this statement, we hear a great truth about humility. In emptying ourselves, we will find fulfillment. In humbling ourselves, we will be exalted. In a culture that prizes the secrets of highly successful people and urges us to awaken our inner giant, this sounds rather counterintuitive. But is it true? Is Jesus right? Are Dante and Dorothy Day pointing us to them and pointing us to the truth of Jesus' statement? We can submit this statement to the test of human experience. Can we walk through life on a perpetual high? Once we have found fulfillment, do we live from that place from then on? Or does the universe have a way of knocking us off our perch and emptying us out? It seems more like the latter than the former. Even for those who have powerfully known the experience, the grace and mercy of God in Jesus Christ, who have known in our hearts and minds the peace of God which passes understanding, they have also known the dark night of the soul and the fear and trembling of salvation, of being saved from sin and its consequences. Is this surprising? Disappointing? Should it be? After all, when Jesus called his disciples, he didn't promise that they would be able to achieve anything in 1 year. Rather, he said, "Take up your cross and follow me." It seems that we are constantly moving back and forth between emptiness and fulfillment, between humility and exaltation, between death and resurrection. Life still knocks the wind out of us. The universe still reduces us to tears. Death and loss will bring us to our knees. But rather try to awaken the giant or the hero within. We try to remember the truth and the promise that all who exalt themselves will be humbled, and all who humble themselves will be exalted.